Hi, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, September the 5th, 1995. In the fireside room this morning, our speaker is Ron Burke, continuing his series on the lighter side of faith. Today's topic, let us play. Let's listen in.
This is session two of the series on the lighter side of faith, and it is entitled, Let Us Play. And for those of you who were around last night, you know that I am an experienced Holden leader, and I know that it takes a while for people to kind of drift in. So in all of my sessions, the first few minutes or so, we will just kind of entertain you. We will reward those of you who were early comers. But the meat of the presentation, we will wait a while. For those who will inevitably be, not late's not a good word, is it? Tardy. last night it was mentioned that among my many, many qualifications, the one that seems to be most impressive of people is the fact that I am a Texas goat rancher. There aren't very many of us. I guess that's why people always want to talk about that. And that our ranch is in central Texas near a little town called Pontotoc. And I always like to talk about Pontotoc because they need all the tourism development help they can get. And so they've kind of asked me to go around the world spreading.
The Chamber of Commerce.
So next year, if you don't want to come back to Holden, you are welcome to come to Pontotoc. We have some hills, anthills, and other things. Do we have any more vacant chairs? A couple? There are a couple of vacancies over here, or maybe somebody will, and over here.
Two in the back. Lots of places upstairs.
One here.
But Pontotoc is a small town, as I mentioned yesterday. It is so small that their shopping center is three pickups back up to the road. One of them selling wood, the other one selling watermelon, and the third one is for sale itself. So I don't know whether you've ever been in a town like that. And really give you some idea how small Pontotoc is. When I was born, on October 24th, my mother and I received gifts, many gifts, as the firstborn child of the year. That's a test to see whether you were awake or figured that out. Pontotoc is a typical American community in that not everybody works or enjoys work, but they believe in work. They are students, are well trained in the American Protestant work ethic. But they also know how to play. That I'm sure there are some of you here from rural backgrounds, ranching and farming. And one of the nice things about being in that business is, yes, there's always work to do. But a lot of it is the kind of work that doesn't really have to be done today. And if you wake up one morning and say, gee whiz, I don't want to go out and dig those fence posts today. Let's go fishing. You have that liberty. I'm not sure we always have the discipline to do that, but we do at least have that liberty. And fishing and hunting, I should mention here that Pontotoc is in Mason County, Texas, which has the highest concentration of white-tailed deer in the United States and in the world. And so we know a lot about hunting in that area. And they're not very big, but we got a lot of them. And fishing is also big. We have quite a few rivers and streams, and as we call them down there, stock tanks, dirt tanks. In other parts of the country, they are known as ponds. But if you're a Texan talking about tanks, that's what they're talking about. And a neighbor of mine recently was driving around in his pasture, and he came up on a dirt tank that he had, and we'd had some rain recently, and it was full and overflowing, and he got out and was admiring it. We always admire water in our part of the country. And he had this particular tank stocked with fish, and he happened to notice that here were some big old catfish up grazing. They graze on the bottom and grass and some of this new area that had just been freshly covered, and he saw this one that he really wanted. So he went back to his pickup, and always prepared, he carried rod and reel and tackle, and he rigged it up, and then he realized he didn't have any baiter, and you don't catch catfish on lures. So he started looking around, and he couldn't find a cricket or a grasshopper or a worm or anything. Didn't know what to do. And then he saw over a little water snake about yay long, and the water snake had a little frog in his mouth. And he said, I'm just going to catch that water snake and take that frog away from him and use it for bait. Well, he caught the water snake very easily, but the water snake would not turn loose of that little frog. So the rancher, also being a good Texan, went back to his pickup where he had a cooler, and he opened it up and popped the top on German Kool-Aid, as we call it in Texas. Little Lone Star beer, and he took it over and he poured that beer in that snake's mouth, and right away it turned loose of the frog. So he threw the snake down, rigged the frog up on his hook, and he cast it out there, and he's standing there, you know, waiting for that old big one to hit. All of a sudden he feels a little tap down on his boot, and he looks down, and it's the water snake with another frog. Are there any vacancies? There are two in the corner over here. So if any of you go trout fishing today, you might make sure you take along whatever, okay? Most of us, most of you were probably raised in a place like Pontotoc, or almost any place in America. You were exposed probably at a very early age to the, as I mentioned earlier, the Protestant work ethic. And that is basically, you get what you earn and you work. That if there's a basic purpose for us being on this earth, it is to work. Now, I am not about to say anything against work, but I think there is also the idea that we need to counteract some of that guilt that we feel about leisure time sometimes. That you know, I was kind of raised that if you were enjoying something, it had to be bad. And the more you unenjoyed something, the better it was for you. It was kind of like the difference between ice cream and castor oil. Castor oil was good for you. Ice cream was bad for you. Or you were probably raised with some sort of philosophy like idle hands are the devil's workshop. It's an old saying that all of us have heard. But there's another old saying that I learned at a very early age, much to my parents' chagrin, and that is that all work and no play makes Ron a dull boy. There is a proper place for play in our world, and in a world with shorter work weeks, the average American worker today works quite a bit less than the worker of a couple of generations ago. People are also taking longer to get into the workforce through the process of education than they used to, and then they're getting out of it earlier. You don't have to go back very far when there were lots of people, 65, 70, 80, still out working. And not just because they wanted to, but because they had to, and also because it was just the proper thing to do. Nowadays, we retire earlier, we live longer, so we have more time than that we don't have to work. And what do we do with that? We come to Holden Village, that's what we do. Well, this morning, I would like for us to at least consider this subject of let us play. What is the place of play in a world of work? Is that the sign we're supposed to start? Well, we're ahead. Some of you are undoubtedly subscribers to National Geographic magazine, and the December 1994 issue the cover story was Animals at Play. Rather interesting, shows a monkey with a snowball. There are monkeys that have learned how to make snowballs, and they use them not as weapons, but to play. It's a very interesting article. One of my favorite television programs, for those of you who have cable or access to Super Channel WTBS, which goes out of Atlanta, which goes all over the country, on Sunday night they have National Geographic Explorer, the last great adventure of the weekend, as they call it. And I am one of those that bemoans, yes, a lot of the fluff and chewing gum, as they said, for the mind on television. But there's also some good stuff if you look around, and I think that National Geographic Explorer is one of the good stuff. What I'd like to do for the first few minutes is to share with you a short section that takes off from this article, Animals at Play, and it will present, I think, a lot of discussion starters and some attitudes towards play that hopefully will get us discussing about some things, and then we will, being in the place we are, see how all this fits into our spirituality and our faith and our place as people in the kingdom. As I mentioned to some of you who were earlier, this here is a video projector. Some of you may be a little close to that. There is a video monitor over here. Can everybody see at least one of those? So we will try. They have supposedly taught me how to use this thing, so we will see. I don't know whether that light, I think that plugs in up there. Can you unplug that? Okay. See what happens. There will be commercials, but we will try to get
National Geographic magazine. Our cover story was on play. This may look like goofing off, but it's not. This is serious business. Almost all mammals do it. Sea lions play hide and seek.
Okay, who's over by that light switch? Can you turn that on, please? Maybe plug that back in up here. Had any of you seen this before? We're the only one in here. I used to do a lecture on all the things that you just saw, and I thought that this might be a little easier on all of us. What did you learn from that? Just some of the, kind of summarized it up at the end. Can you remember that about play?
Everybody does it.
Everybody does it.
Everything does it.
We
People
learn
that
through
don't play don't have a very fulfilled life.
Okay.
Never too old play. Never too old play.
Never too old.
Play develops skills.
Play develops skills. And the number one thing, play is just fun. Okay, the reason I show this is because I think it makes us aware of some things that maybe we are not that aware of sometimes, how important play is in our lives just as human beings. That for all of the things that said here with animals, and we are, quote, an animal, many of those can be said about us. It develops us physically, it teaches us survival skills, and the other thing which was not mentioned here, which I think is very important, it's also a social kind of thing. It teaches animals and human beings how to relate to each other, and not only to later on fight each other, but to live with each other as well. The thing, and I just think that's important. As I said at the beginning, sometimes we get so work-oriented in our society that we tend to downplay play. And we need to be reminded that there is a very proper place for play in our lives. And as we see children running around here, and sometimes they irritate and irk some of us older ones, like the two dogs at the very beginning. The older dog liked to play until they got tired, you know, and then went off. How many of you grandparents have had that same kind of experience? And I'm not too sure grandchildren learn as quick as that young dog did. But we need to understand that that's very important for them. At the same time, we need to understand that play is a lifetime experience. And I would like to think that the reason why you are here at Holden Village is this is a form of play for you. And I guess I do this kind of thing for myself as well as anybody else, that I need to be continually reaffirmed and told that it's okay to play, because I have a lot of those old tapes from my childhood and from my youth and from my younger adult days when I felt guilty about play, that I should be working all the time. And in the scheme of creation, there is a place for play. There's a time to work and a time to play, and we need to know that. Tomorrow, I will get into some more detailed things. We won't show any more films, and I'll go back to doing presentations and sharing some things with you and getting you to share some things among yourselves. But with the time that we have remaining here, I'd like to talk just a little bit about play in a spiritual sense. Where does it fit in biblically, in the tradition of the church? How do we as Christians deal with this thing called play? All of us, I think, are comfortable with the idea that when we work, we're doing God's will. God wants us to work. But when it comes to play, sometimes there may be a little question mark there. Is this really what God wants us to do? How do you feel about that? Have any of you wrestled with that and resolved it? Or?
We have a committee called Fun and Fellowship, and they arrange for all of us to go roller skating, bowling, and if we were going to do this on our own, we wouldn't do it, you know, too easily. So it helps us. It helps us to go out and play a little bit that we might not. That's the way our church helps us.
Okay.
Play.
So play is a part of your church program for adults.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if the church programs it, it's all right.
Right.
Okay. Anyone else on? Yes.
Well, there's a nice book in the library I found called Sabbath Rest by Tilden Edwards, and he talks about the importance of play as a part of Sabbath rest.
Yeah, we will deal specifically here tomorrow with that whole idea of rest and Sabbath. All this ties in, and there are two excellent books. And I was checking in the bookstore this morning, and they're not there. This one was here last year. I just got it. It's A Leisure, A Spiritual Need, and the other one is A Christian at Play. Both of these, if you're interested in looking at the theological side of prayer, the spiritual side, both are excellent books. And not just for you individually, but they might make good study books in your play group at church. Any other ideas or attitudes about faith and play? Yes?
Singing?
Okay, you just made a connection there. Singing, pleasure, play. The significance of that is, I think, that we need to realize what is play. Smith.
I think that I associate humor with play, and I think God must have a good sense of humor. He created all of us.
Okay. Yeah, we talked about that last night. I feel that's a very important part of it. And it goes back to the idea, what we said right here, that play is fun. And let's wrestle just a little bit with the definition of play. Maybe we're not that clear on that. Play, and there are lots of people who have tried to define this, but basically maybe one of the best definitions comes from Mark Twain, and let's see if I have it written here somewhere. Basically, it's the idea that that story from Tom Sawyer, if you remember, where Tom has to whitewash the fence, and that is work for Tom, and he doesn't want to do it. So what does he do? He convinces his friends that it's play and gets them to do it. And he is free then to go off and play by what his definition is. And basically what Tom Sawyer, which is really Mark Twain speaking, says that work consists of whatever a body is obliged to do. Play consists of whatever a body is not obliged to do. That might be a pretty good working definition of play and work for many of us, that there is a freedom in play, that I can do what I want to do. That for me is play. And therefore you have the idea, just like with Tom Sawyer and his friends, that one person's work is another person's play and vice versa. I think I'm a good example of that. A lot of my time is spent doing this kind of thing, where I'm a very public person, I'm really thinking, I'm relating with people, I've got to do a lot of preparation and research for this. It's mind work for me. My idea of play is to leave all this behind, go out to this ranch which I was telling you about that I have through the grace of inheritance in Central Texas, go in there, check my mind at the gate, and start doing pure physical labor. I get on the end of a shovel or a post hole digger or chasing goats or cattle or chopping wood or something like that. That is play for me. Now, the person who spends all week doing that as part of their work, that's work for them. Their idea of play is to get away with other people and socialize and talk about serious. That's play for them. So what I'm saying is that one person's play may be another person's work, and we need to realize that sometimes. But play, basically, even with all of the things that this film pointed out, the benefits of play, the most basic, this isn't good English, but to heck with that, the basic aspect of play that I have to keep in mind is that it doesn't have to have any purpose at all. It is an end in itself. It's just fun. If I'm doing something for the benefit of it, is it really play? If I'm just doing something for pure fun and pleasure, it's play. And that is good. It's okay. There are lots of... let me read you just one little piece here that may, from a theological perspective, spiritual perspective, sum up what I'm trying to say. This is by Frederick Buechner from a little book, Wishful Thinking, and it is in the bookstore. It's a fun little bit of brief definitions of a lot of biblical words and concepts. When King David's wife berates him for making a fool of himself by leaping and dancing before the ark of the Lord with all his might, he protests by saying that it seemed exactly the right thing to do, considering all the Lord had done for him. Therefore will I play before the Lord, he tells her. That's 2 Samuel 6, 14-21. When God describes how he will rescue Jerusalem from his wrath and make it new again, a city of truth, in Zechariah, he conveys the glory of it by saying, "And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets." When the psalmist praises God for creating this great and wide sea wherein are creeping things innumerable, he makes special mention of Leviathan, whom, as he says, thou hast made to play therein. That's Psalm 104. The king, the boys and girls, the whale, they are none of them accomplishing anything. They are none of them proving anything. There's nothing edifying or educational or particularly helpful in what they are doing. Nothing that you'd be likely to think of as religious. They haven't a thought in their heads. They're just playing. That's all. They're letting themselves go and having a marvelous good time at it. David has sweat pouring down his face and his eyes aflame. The boys and girls are spinning like tops. The whale has just shot a 30-foot spout into the air and is getting ready to have his, to heave his entire 150 tons into the air after it. What is the wind doing in the hayfield? What is Yosemite Falls up to? Or the surf along the coast of Maine? What about the fire going wild in the belly of the stove, or the rain pounding on the roof like the Hallelujah Chorus, or the violet on the windowsill leaning toward the sun? What, for that matter, is God up to getting the whole thing started in the first place? Hurling the stars around like rice at a wedding, gathering the waters together into the seas like a woman gathering shells, calling forth all the creatures of earth and air like a man calling swing your partner at a hoedown. Be fruitful and multiply, God calls, and creator and creature both, all but lose track of which is which in the wonder of their playing. Thoughts from Frederick Buechner on the spiritual aspect of play. There are some theologians who will go so far as to say that God played when he created the earth. He did it just for the fun of it, which can lead you to all kinds of thoughts. In the same way, when he became a human being, that he did it for pleasure, for play, for the fun of it. I'm not defending that or anything else. I'm throwing it out as a provocative thought, that we may be God's playthings. In a world that gets so wrapped up in seriousness and work sometimes, that may be a refreshing thought. Any other comments, reactions? Yes.
I've heard play being described as sharpening one's saw, so to speak. Or
sharpening the saw? Mm-hmm.
Sort of taking time to sharpen your skill.
Yeah. Absolutely. All work and no play can make a dull saw. Yes. Yeah. I hope, if nothing else, and I do this sometimes, we don't have time to do that, is to really get you to stop and look at maybe your life. A good exercise, what I do sometime, and I'll tell you just how to do it, and you may want to do this on your own sometime today, is look back when you were a child, roughly 5 years old, and how did you play? That is usually a great discussion start. People just really have good memories and it starts flowing out. Then the next thing is to think ahead to when you were a senior in high school or 18 years old, roughly that time in your life. How did you play? And a lot of people get snickering and, yeah. But that too is a topic that most people can get into sharing and thinking about that. The third question is, right now, how do you play? And invariably when I do that with a group, there's usually a long pause. And people have, The lesson is that, for most of us, is that play has changed quite a bit in our lives. But the importance of it, I don't think, changes at all. And I think all of us concerned about our humanity and our place and for self-care, and we do have just as much responsibility to love ourselves as we do our neighbors, because if you don't care for yourself, sometimes it gets really tough to care for other people. We need to play. And I think a lot of us play more than maybe we think we do. We like to justify it sometimes, but just play for the fun of it. And I hope that that's what your time here at Holden is a time of play, and that you will look at it as such and rejoice in it. So go and play. I have also one final commercial, I guess I was supposed to say, is the bookstore has asked me to remind you that there are a couple of books over there by myself, which I worked at writing, and now I'm playing at selling. But I hope this has given you some seeds for thought and also some urge to go out and play. Tomorrow we will be meeting at the same time in the next door, next room next door, and the subject will be you don't have to chase rabbits all the time, which will look at the whole concept of rest and Sabbath, and it will kind of tie in with this today, but we will take a whole different approach to that tomorrow. So go and work no more.